Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Friday, January 12th, 2024. Come to the end of another week in January, and I guess that's a good thing because 2024 is destined to be quite a wild year. Thank you so much for tuning in to Worldview Tube, broadcasting on WVW-TV, and we appreciate your viewership. Of course, as I say every day, it's our job to bring to the marketplace of ideas, the great marketplace of intellectual stimulation, viewpoints and information that contribute greatly to the national and international debate. And that's the purpose of WVW-TV and Worldview Tube. We are bringing you very current information and very thoughtful commentary on very important issues, both political and economic, that need further exploration. So we're happy to be here today broadcasting. Thank you so much for watching. And of course, if you are feeling generous in this first of the new year, certainly go to the WVW-TV Foundation. We more than welcome your viewership, and we also appreciate your sponsorship. If you're feeling generous, you can certainly make a donation to help defray the costs of this fine programming. We also thank our corporate sponsors. As you know, we are not a commercial television station. We don't sell ads. So therefore, we are not beholden to our commercial, we don't have commercial advertisers, but we do appreciate our sponsors. And of course, the sponsor of my program is Swiss America Trading, which is a great company based out of Arizona, American company based out of Arizona, and they sell precious metals. If you're interested in looking at precious metals, and this is tangible precious metals that you buy and hold in your hand, you buy it, they ship it to you, you hold it, then give Swiss America a call at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them for some free information about the precious metals market. I tell them Dan Eastman from the Eastman Financial Report sent you. They're happy to mail out free information, no obligation, no salesman will call. But it's an important sector, and you may want to be thinking about diversifying your holdings in these very troubling and turbulent economic times. You can also go to Swiss America's website, swissamerica.com, real simple. And if you use the promo code EASTMAN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, you type in EASTMAN and you can see all the specials and what they have to offer. And they'll be happy to send you free information. When you think about tangible precious metals, the question is, you know, why would you buy precious metals? And of course, there are numerous reasons to do so. But of course, people think about the effects of inflation on their purchasing power. If you have surplus, which means you've earned more money than you've spent, and you happen to have surplus, you'd like to park that surplus in a place that might have some inflation protection. And that's primarily why people look at precious metals. And the way people invest in precious metals, of course, is you can buy gold coins or silver coins or platinum coins. And there's different ways or you can buy bullion, or actually you can even buy numismatic coins, which are collector coins. And all of these things are tangible collection type assets that will go up in value as inflation pushes the general price structure in the economy. So if you're thinking about how do you protect some of your hard-earned buying power from the ravages of inflation, maybe precious metals could be for you. So that's why you want to give Swiss America a call or go to their website at swissamerica.com and find out for yourself. And the more information you have, the more you learn, the better you are in the marketplace. And of course, any investment, you need to do your homework and think of whether it's right for you. But if you're interested in purchasing precious metals, there's something important to know, that in that marketplace, there are vendors who've been around a very long time, like Swiss America, who is a very competent dealer in gold and silver and platinum and these precious metals, whether it's a coin or a block of gold, or if it's a collector coin from the days gone by, you will want to deal with a trusted vendor who has a lot of experience, and that's why you would call or reach out to Swiss America. I mean, you can buy gold in the big box stores these days, but when you're making an investment decision or a purchase decision, you will want to be dealing with people who know what they're doing. And I think that's why Swiss America is a very good company to call. They're kind enough to sponsor our network, but at the same time, they've been in that space for a very long time. The people are full-time experts in precious metals, and they will not steer you wrong. They will explain the risks and the benefits And you will want to, when you're turning over your hard-earned cash, you will want to be dealing with a trusted vendor. And that's why I think Swiss America certainly fits that bill. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271. Go to the website, swissamerica.com. Use the promo code Eastman so they know you watched it here. And see what they have to offer, and feel free to call them and discuss the pros and cons with their experts, because they are truly people who know that market very well. So thank you, Swiss America. I appreciate your sponsorship, and we appreciate everything you've been doing for decades with WBW TV. Okay, let's move into the news. And of course, this is a continuation. It's Friday, so we've been talking about this for all week. We are looking at this federal budget deficit situation, and we're looking at the federal spending problem. And earlier in the week, I talked about over last weekend, the Democrats and the Republicans came together with a joint continuing resolution bill to the tune of $1.66 trillion that would effectively kick the can further down the road. And I've talked about this all week. If you're just tuning in, a simple recap is that the federal government does not pass a budget bill that is signed into law by the president that binds the federal government to specific spending bumpers. Okay, they don't do that. They used to do that, but they don't do that. States do it, municipalities, counties, states, they all have budget bills, which are laws. They sign them into law, the governor and or the mayor, whatever, council, your county council. And effectively, that is the law under which the government operates. And that's prudent government, because what you do is you take a look at all the needs. And of course, some people get what they want, other people don't. Then there's a bill, then it's signed into law, and that's the budget. Okay. Well, the federal government doesn't do that. We have structured this federal government since World War II to be, first of all, it was the strongest country in the world. And we had responsibilities to put the world back together after World War II, and we did, and we had Bretton Woods, and we pegged everybody's currency to the dollar, and we've been off to the races. And since that time, we have now accumulated $34 trillion in debt. And of course, we're running deficits of $1.5 trillion, $1.66 trillion to $2 trillion per year that adds to the debt. And we're suddenly finding ourselves in a vortex where the debt can only get bigger. So because we don't have a federal budget, Congress has to pass continuing resolutions which allow the federal agencies, and keep in mind the president, and then he or she has a cabinet with cabinet secretaries, and each is a department of government, and they all just have a budget that was in place forever and ever, and it's a continuing resolution that allows those agencies to continue to spend money. Now, it's questionable. When you start to look at this, you start to ask the question, well, you know, why can't they just keep spending money? Well, there's some perception that you need to have Congress do something, because the House of Representatives controls the purse string of the federal government, and spending bills, theoretically, except when they play games, come from the House of Representatives, goes to the Senate, big argument, and then they negotiate, and then you come up with a final bill on these continuing resolutions, and it goes to the president, and he signs that. It's not a budget, they're continuing resolutions. And that's what we're in right now. And of course, when I started the show, and I think I'm repeating myself from yesterday, when I started this show in February of last year, 2023, this is now the fourth time that Congress has had to kick the can down the road, because the story is the same thing. If Congress doesn't act, then the government will shut down. Well, the government never shuts down. The government just keeps going. And that's why we're in this fourth time in less than 1 year. And of course, the Republicans and Democrats came up with the $1.66 trillion bill compromise on these four continuing resolutions that pass. So at least on paper, we have laws that are signed by the president that allow agencies to continue forward, kicking the can down the road. Nobody's proposing a budget where we have a balanced budget, or we have a structured deficit, or perhaps we run a surplus. No, that's not happening. So anyway, we're in this thing, and it happened over the weekend. And of course, the thing that was interesting on Monday and Tuesday was how quickly the Democrats and Republicans came together and came up with a number, and that was the story. It was kind of buried, actually. It wasn't the big government shutting down. It was sort of just, hey, we came up with continuing resolutions that we will punt forward. Well, then, of course, the Republican caucus of conservative people in Congress were appalled at what they saw, because if you start to peel these four continuing resolutions apart, you realize that there's the defense budget, which is vast. And then you realize there is the social safety net budget, which is vast. And then, of course, there's the ag budget, and then there's all this other spending. And when you start to look at what happens, the conservative Republicans are saying, we want cuts in some of the social stuff, but we don't want to cut the military. And the Democrats say, we don't want to cut anything, because they just basically want to just keep spending and spending and spending. So we have this conservative caucus group that they're starting to agitate rather loudly. And of course, that puts Speaker Johnson in a difficult situation, because at the end of the day, if he came from that conservative side, and the idea was we want to start to cut spending. And the biggest issue is close the border. I think that was very interesting, that they want to close the southern border, and they want to cut a lot of the programs. And basically, that isn't going to sell really well with the Democrats and the mainstream Republicans. So we're going back and forth. Now the issue is, what will this do to the Speaker of the House? I mean, is this a career-killing move that will trigger his political departure? We don't know. But when you think about Speaker McCarthy, who didn't last very long, he ran afoul of that group, and he not only lost the speakership, but now he's not even running for re-election. He resigned. He's gone. So the question is, What do we expect to see out of Washington? And we're hearing the usual predictable noise, and we'll see what happens. But the bigger problem, you know, that's the political side. Now we take a look at the economic side, and it is really becoming clear and evident that the Congress of the United States, and perhaps the administration, really are finding themselves in a vortex situation where it becomes exceedingly difficult to even make minor cuts in the spending, because the spending has specific momentum, and federal spending is very much an allocated process, where once something is funded, those programs, first of all, there's a constituency behind each one. Social Security has a big constituency. Medicare has a big constituency. Medicaid has a big constituency. Defense, you know, budget, big constituency. So the point is, when you start to create these spending platforms, and they have sort of a financial or fiscal life of their own, it becomes very difficult for anyone to do anything other than spend at least that money, which is the continuing resolutions. And keep in mind, when they're cutting here and doing that over, you know, spending somewhere else, they're really sort of like moving the deck chairs around on the Titanic. And it's a big argument going on. Put them over there. No, put them over here. But what we really have to think about is a fundamental change in the way the federal government operates. And that becomes a very, very difficult political burden to achieve, because the federal government, since its early inception, has always had a very special ability to tax, and whether it was either taxes from duties in the beginning, or selling off the continent in the middle, and then, of course, the income tax in 1913, it's a very, very big machine. And the question is, how do you turn that machine around? And I think politically, when you're going into an election year, and keep in mind, everybody who's in the House of Representatives this year, they're all up for re-election every 2 years. And that's why the conservatives are making noise about being prudent. And that's why the liberals are saying spend, spend, spend. Because when you go home and you run in your district and your constituency, they want to hear what, you know, what you're doing. And that's why we are in a situation that makes it very difficult to have anything other than massive deficits and massive national debt going forward, until someday the bell is going to ring and nobody knows what that looks like. And that's why I think we, the people, and I talked about this earlier in the week, when you look at the relatively few number of taxpayers in the United States, it becomes more and more obvious that as this massive federal spending is vortexing out of control, I mean, it's just, it's like a nuclear reactor where they pull out all the carbon rods and this thing is really accelerating. There's really no way to see how you're going to get to a more prudent path without some major structural change. And when that happens, it's not going to be a good thing, because if you look historically at most big economies throughout the world, starting with the Roman Empire, these things don't end well. And I think from a political perspective, the United States, we the people, need to start really drilling down into exactly what's happening. You know, maybe you start with your local common council or your county board and your state government, and then you start looking at the federal government, and you start to realize that the people cannot function in an American society and economy in a state of naivete. And unfortunately, after World War II, when the United States won the war and became the global superpower, and of course, it was always the balance of the Soviet Union, you know, was balancing and keeping each other in check until that collapsed in the 1980s. And then at least the wall came down and the gates came down and the Eastern Bloc ran for the door. You find yourself in a situation where Americans have assumed and presumed global superiority. And it, back in the day when countries were war-torn and in shambles and Asia was very, very, very undeveloped, okay? It was a very undeveloped place with a lot of people living there. It was very easy for the United States to develop this feeling of global superiority. And we are still in that mindset where people in the United States, politicians, people on the street, your friends and neighbors, there's just a presumption that the United States is the world superpower and we have infinite wealth and infinite amounts of money to spend and infinite interests in making sure that the world looks the way we want it to. But when you start looking at the numbers, and I think this is something that's probably going to be talked about more, is we simply are not big enough to be doing this any longer because we don't have enough people in the United States. Now, this doesn't mean throw open the southern border and bring millions of more people in. Although I think politically, it's very interesting to me when you think about that. I'm descended on my mother's side from immigrants. They poured into Ellis Island. Everybody came in, wanted a better life. Here we are. Turned out really great for us. But the point was, at the time, with national expansion into the Midwest and the West, there was a real shortage of people in order to pay for all this stuff. And, you know, we came in and here we are, and then we pay half our income in taxes and it's expensive. So the point is, at our current population, we cannot be the world's largest debtor. We cannot be the world's largest policeman. We cannot spend because our population base isn't big enough. And the only solution, of course, is to double or triple the size of the American population, which would fundamentally, where have I heard this before, fundamentally change the United States. Or you have to wake up one day and realize that you can't keep spending. And if you're a household and, you know, you're racking up the credit cards and you have an average American income, and then you wake up one day and there's $2 million on credit cards, which would be roughly with the same equivalent. And you wake up and you realize, wow, I have $2 million on credit cards. I'm never going to pay this off. And thanks to George W. Bush, I can't file for bankruptcy and have that discharged. I have to go into a different layer of bankruptcy where it's restructured, I'm trapped. And that's basically where we are in the United States, is it's simply this illusion that we can continue to spend and print and spend and print is not sustainable. Now, it may have been sustainable in the 70s and 80s when we had this little bitty federal debt. And of course, you know, I very much always refer back to Dr. David Stockman, who was President Reagan's budget director. And he threw up his arms and back in the 80s, and he said, you know what, we're on a trajectory that is not good. And of course, people, conservative people, you know, hard money people, were listening to David Stockman and saying, you know, he's right. There's a big deficit there. But that was like, you know, $1 trillion, or, you know, it was small. It was very small. We're at $34 trillion. Actually, it was much smaller than a trillion. It was for him frightening. But at the end of the day, you could still play that game as the world's global policeman. But there comes a point when you get to debt that is so large at 34 trillion plus. Now we got 1.6 trillion. Add that on, we'll have 35 trillion, 36 trillion. And you look at our annual deficit spending, which is not connected to the tax base. And more and more and more as these deficit spending numbers increase, keep up that deficit. There's a dollar behind every single dollar spent. This is not some sort of academic concept. If the federal government spends $1.66 billion or trillion dollars, you see, every last one of those trillion dollars, 1.66 trillion, is revenue on somebody's income statement. That money is going in somebody's pocket, and that becomes debt on the federal balance sheet. And all those bondholders hold those bonds, and those are assets on the bondholders' balance sheet. That money belongs to somebody. And as that continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger on a population, even if you have 10 million people, they all flooded in. That's apparently the last number I saw. 10 million people sneak in. Well, let me tell you, those 10 million people, you know, here's your share. And I think yesterday the number was $264,000 per taxpayer is the share of the national debt. So I guess what you should do is set up a folding table at the southern border. And as they come across, you say, you know, here, you owe us $264,000. Welcome to America. Get to work, because we need half of your income in order to continue running these massive deficits. It's not going to fix it. It's just going to allow us to continue running these deficits. This is the problem that we're in right now. And I think, you know, from a perspective in an election year, this debate has to be had, because ultimately what happens when this debt gets big enough and this deficit spending gets big enough and wide enough, then you have to look at the people who are attached to that debt. And of course, when you sell federal debt, the reason everybody in the globe buys it is because it's backed by the full faith and credit of the United States. Okay. Well, what does full faith and credit mean from a legal perspective? What it means is the federal government has the power to tax the citizens of the United States to pay off the debt. Now, of course, we talked about this, you know, they'd have to raise the taxes to 90%+. To start to change the direction, and they can't politically do that, because if Congress passes a 90% income tax rate this year before the November election, it's not going to be good. There will be political blowback, so it's never going to happen. So the question is, well, then what does happen? How does this work? Do we just keep kicking the can and you say, well, you know, I'm older, I'm going to be dead before, you know, the answer comes to me, what do I care? Well, there is a day of reckoning. And I think that's something we have to really ponder as American people, is when this blows, what do I do to preserve my wealth, assuming that I'm allowed to have wealth? Because when you think about it, when you look at our Bill of Rights, our constitutional rights in the United States, the Constitution limits the power of government. That it was designed to keep government real small, okay? And of course, that really hasn't worked really well. But at the end of the day, when you have property, you own real estate, or you own gold coins, or you own a car, or a pair of skis, snowing like crazy, or maybe you got skis, whatever you have a bed, you have a desk, maybe you've got a refrigerator, you're one of the lucky ones, all of that is your personal property, and we call that chattel. That's what people in the law business call it. It's chattel, but it means personal property that you have a right to hold and own. And as part of that right, it's a bundle of rights. But the important one is the right of exclusion. So like when you buy a house and you got a lot and there's a house on it, you have a right to keep other people from coming in. It's trespass. That's what trespass is all about. And you know, in the olden days, you know, and sometimes there's criminal trespass, sometimes there's, you know, just a civil complaint of trespass. But the point is, you own your car, you own your house, you own your, you know, your shoes and socks, you own whatever you have is your personal property, because our Constitution says the government can't take that stuff away from you. Okay. And when that Constitution is stretched, the point of breaking, how do you protect your assets when there's a juggernaut going on, you know, absolute massive national debt, massive deficits, high tax rates? How do you protect your assets? Well, then, you know, I don't know, you're going to be big muscles or what? That, I mean, that, this is the whole feudalism thing coming back. So this is a very important component of protecting individual rights. You can't go along in life as a citizen and not pay attention to this stuff. And so I don't follow politics. They're all a bunch of crooks, blah, blah, blah. It's time to start thinking about this from an economic perspective, because you've got to have a government that taxes and spends on the public good, which is good, but that has to be managed. And not everybody can have a bridge to downtown from their front lawn. I mean, you got to kind of allocate. That's what we're talking about. And there's an interesting story in mainstream financial today that is talking about the election. Again, this is not a political show. It's a financial show. But politics impacts, as you can see, finances. And the interesting story was that there's like something on the order of $6 trillion in tax cuts at stake that are coming due in 2025. Of course, these tax cuts were signed into law by President Trump when he was president of the United States. And of course, they are coming due now in 2025. And the reason that they do these tax cuts with a deadline is because what they're trying to do is incentivize, and then they take a look at the economy and these things lapse. If these are allowed to lapse, you're talking about $6 trillion more dollars in taxes over a decade. That's a lot of taxes. And you know, nobody wants to pay taxes, because taxes, you know, the money that comes out of my wallet, taxes, that's, you know, the government spends that. I want to keep it for myself. But the point is, that is showing you the structural imbalance within the federal budget system, that there's $6 trillion that people are keeping in their pockets for their own enjoyment right now that may be subject to taxation and collection by the federal government. And when you're running taxes, now 2025, that's a long way away, right? 13 months. You think about that. That's where I'm talking about this idea of increasing the taxes. They may not raise the marginal rates, but if all the tax breaks that everybody gets lapse, that's $6 trillion into the federal treasury over time that will help with this deficit and with the national debt. Now, if you think they're going to collect that and pay down the national debt and run a balanced budget, you're perhaps incorrect. Let's be polite. It ain't happening. So that's something that we have to be thinking about, and that's why these elections matter to the national economy. But either way, there is no magic wand, and nobody's going to wave a magic wand, and we're going to have a balanced budget, and we're going to have, you know, manageable national debt. We are in a situation that is going to take rather very, very strong will from people to live within their means. And that means if you were to try and fix this politically, you'd have to elect a Congress and a president that would basically slam the brakes on America. We'd start looking a lot more like Germany or France and not have the global reach. And let me tell you, the special interests are just simply not interested in that. So I hate to bring gloom and doom on a Friday afternoon. This would be an afternoon in 1 minute. But at the end of the day, you know, this is what we're looking at. Final story is the Bureau of Labor Statistics is showing that the full-time jobs created in the United States is down big time in December, which means that for the job growth we're looking at, they tend to be part-time jobs. So you're looking at a tax-paying base where there are fewer full-time workers and more part-time workers. That's an interesting problem to have. But we'll talk more about this next week. I'm sure the Congress will be busy over the weekend rattling their sabers, but have a great weekend. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate your viewership at WVW-TV and the Eastman Financial Report. And we'll talk to you Monday. Take care. Bye.